What's up, believers? Welcome to episode number 13, but season numero dos. That is right. We are in season number two.
We made it.
Coming off of WrestleMania. Yeah, we lasted two seasons. A season. I don't know. We did this. Suck it, COVID. You couldn't stop us.
That's right. We made it. COVID be damned.
Yeah, so we had a big break there, and we mentioned that was probably going to be something weird and something kind of in that realm just because of the timing and scheduling that the pay-per-views came out. Because we had what? We had Backlash, and then we had Fastlane, and then...
No, Royal Rumble, then Fastlane. Was Royal Rumble... Oh, what was between...
Oh, Elimination Chamber. That's
Elimination Chamber, then Fastlane. Our bad.
Then
Backlash is next.
Yes. So we had a couple in there, but it was like three pay-per-views in 2 months, and then thrown in that, I think we also had an NXT takeover and then another NXT takeover over WrestleMania week. So there was a lot of stuff to cover. That being said, you don't want to hear us talk at you for 4 hours. So we're not going to cover everything in detail. If you do, however, want to hear us talk at you about wrestling for 4 hours, please leave a comment or send us an email or what have you and let us know that.
We'll gladly talk about wrestling for 4 hours if that's what you want.
We'll absolutely do that. I guess let's just kind of go over just a very broad storyline coverage of after main or just leading up to Mania.
So, yeah, Fastlane. I'm just going to say Fastlane starting with the U.S. champion on the kickoff show is a slap in the face to the United States championship. Riddle against Mustafa Ali on the kickoff show with a championship match, the pay-per-view before WrestleMania.
That's a slap in the face to everybody on the mid-card, to be perfectly honest. Like, you know, there's some guys that are just... not going to make it to the main event because Vince has a hard on for big giants. And we know this. He's a big, big, big proponent of the big man model. And we have shown time and time again that it doesn't work necessarily, but whatever. But there's a lot of guys on a mid card, and that's where your company is built. It's in the strength of the mid card because they're the pillar that holds everything else up.
The big irritant to me on this one is you have a United States Championship on the kickoff show. You have Braun Strowman supposedly against Shane McMahon, who fakes an injury, against Elias on the show. You have Seth Rollins, who deserves to be in the top tier of matches, against Shinsuke Nakamura on the show. The Alexa Bliss Randy Orton fight on the show. But the title match goes to the kickoff.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. Just uncalled for, unforgivable. Seriously, at the end of the day, we're watching a wrestling program. We're watching a wrestling federation. And the whole point of those are to highlight the pinnacles, the championships, be it the tag team, the women's tag, the world championship, or the mid-card title. It's to highlight those championships. And when you have a pay-per-view, which literally people were paying, you know, fine, yeah, we have the network and Peacock and whatnot now. But back in the day, you would call your cable company and spend money to watch that.
Yeah.
I would be pissed.
Good money.
Yeah.
Good money. You'd be paying $45 or so.
I have spent $80 in the past on a WrestleMania, watching WrestleMania, like having to do that. I would be upset. I would be highly upset if I paid for that program, you know, the $60 or whatever they were charging, and then come to find out that it's on the kickoff show. The title match is on the kickoff show. That's absolute garbage.
Here's the other kicker. No tag team championship match other than the women's tag team championship. So no Raw tag team, no SmackDown tag team on Fastlane. And I'm just going to throw this out there. You also end up with no SmackDown tag team championship at WrestleMania.
Yeah, we're gonna get into that. We're gonna get into that and all this like stuff.
I'm a bit irritated. Sorry.
Their
creative and match selection for pay-per-views has really got me fired up.
Yeah, the lead up, there's been booking choices that we've not been a fan of. We have basically been chatting back and forth almost every day about our feelings and whatnot regarding this stuff. But realistically, they're just, we have feelings. We have such strong feelings right now, and man, I'm upset over WrestleMania. I'm just gonna throw that out there first and foremost. There was a thing. We're leading up to that. But anyway, what did Fastlane and Elimination Chamber give us? They gave us some storylines leading into WrestleMania.
Yeah, it did that. I'm gonna throw out my highlight of the pay-per-view would be two matches. Seth Rollins and Shinsuke. Obviously, those two guys put on a great match. And yeah. Drew McIntyre and Sheamus in a no-holds-bar match. Those guys beat the tar out of each other and walk away with welts.
Anytime you see, like, a no DQ or, like, some kind of extreme stipulation match, you know that it's just, okay, you know the wrestling isn't going to be the highest quality or whatever, and it's just going to be a chair fest or whatever. We know that. You know, it's those types of matches aren't for the technical savvy portrayed in the ring. That is for settling grudges and whatnot. That being said, Drew and Sheamus left it out there. That absolutely was physical. Did. It was brutal. It was everything you believed. They were just out there to beat the tar out of each other, and it was glorious.
You really thought at the end of that they wanted to kill each other, and they made it. Definitely seemed that way.
Yeah.
McIntyre throwing Sheamus through the back of the LED boards in the Thunderdome. The welts that they leave each other with. Mm. Beating each other with the kendo sticks. Yeah, these two guys leave it all out there every time. Again, two sets of people that I could see fight on every pay-per-view would be Drew and Sheamus and KO and also, wow, name blank. Yeah.
No, and you got this. I believe in you.
Yes. My mind just drew a Sami Zayn. There we go. It's that COVID brain. It still hits me every so often. I'm just going to blame it on that. COVID brain.
I would.
But yeah, KO and Sami Zayn and McIntyre and Sheamus can fight on every pay-per-view and I'd be happy.
I 100% agree. I agree. Yeah, I have a different standout match of the night. Are you forgetting about the tribal chief, the head of the table, the gloriousness that is Roman? I can't even finish that with a straight face. I'm sorry.
I'm sick.
I have, again, more feelings and whatnot. I loathe.
Hey, before we talk about that, let's talk about another great match on the card. Intercontinental Championship, Big E and Apollo Crews.
That was great.
Two more guys that could just throw it down.
Yeah. It was fantastic. I love watching Apollo work. That is another example of somebody that big should not be able to do what that man does. And it's fantastic. He's a great worker. He has skills. He knows what he's doing in the ring, and it all of that shows. And I'm not a huge fan of the weird storyline that they're going with him right now, but you know what? As long as he's getting TV time and actually getting to get out there, I'm all for it.
Yep. I agree. Those two guys, again, they killed it. We'll talk about them more at WrestleMania as they get an additional match at WrestleMania for the title, but Big E and Apollo Crews, round of applause for that match.
Yes.
Because the Universal Championship match was a waste of time.
Yes.
With Edge as the special enforcer.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're not gonna talk. That was Fastlane.
Let's just say it leads up to Daniel Bryan actually getting to throw himself into the Universal Championship match at WrestleMania, making it a three-way. That's all we need to say. The match was garbage. Roman Reigns can't win a match without help. Still. Nope. Weakest champion. Call him a heel. That's how heels work. I'm calling BS.
Yeah.
You want the guy to be head of the table, tribal chief. We're going to bow down. Oh, Roman Reigns. Win a match on your own first.
Yes. If you want a heel champion, you go back and you watch Dolph Ziggler. You watch Daniel Bryan when he was the eco savior. If you want a heel champion, you go back and watch The Miz. You running away from Bobby Lashley, getting intentionally counted out. Those are heel champions. That's what heel champions do. Not, I declare myself the biggest, baddest MF-er in the company, but I can't win a match in a year.
You want us to acknowledge you as the man, yet
yeah.
Jey Uso's helping win every match. Edge helps him win this match.
Yep. Paul Heyman's helped him win.
Paul Heyman unlocked the handcuff so he could beat KO in the Last Man Standing match. Can't win a match at a pay-per-view on his own.
Yeah. I'm not going to declare him the tribal chief. I will declare him the worst paper champion in WWE history. That is what I will declare him. I will recognize him as the worst paper champion. And Roman, if by whatever thing, like miracle, you're hearing this, it has nothing to do with you. I respect you. I respect your skill in the ring as a wrestler. But damn, dude, you got to stick up for yourself, because this direction that creative is taking you is hot garbage.
Yep.
Hot garbage.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It makes
somebody that could be and is a strong champion look uber weak.
Yeah.
Uber weak.
Yeah.
So you ready to move on to NXT TakeOver? Stand and Deliver. Two nights of NXT and a WrestleMania week that saw Monday Night Raw, the Hall of Fame on Tuesday night,
yep.
NXT Stand and Deliver Wednesday, Thursday, SmackDown on Friday, WrestleMania Saturday, Sunday. That was WrestleMania week.
That is a thing. A WrestleMania week. It was a week-long event, and not just, fanfare and stuff. It was every single day of the week had something going on.
Yeah.
I was not mad. Stand and Deliver, by far, the best part of that week.
Absolutely.
I do realize that WrestleMania is included in that. Overall, match for match, pound for pound, Stand and Deliver, nights 1 and 2 were better than WrestleMania.
They did stand and they did deliver.
Yes.
Every match.
Everyone out there, let that sink in. NXT, which is the third brand, the developmental league, the people trying to get up to the main roster, put on a better pay-per-view, or a better two-night pay-per-view than Wrestle Effing Mania.
As a whole, absolutely.
As a whole. Now, there were some caveats. There are highlights and individual matches and everything that happened at WrestleMania that were mind-blowing. That being said, overall, NXT Creative, we love you. You did exactly what you should have done. You stood. You delivered. It was fantastic, and thank you.
I would say nearly perfect pay-per-view. Yes.
WrestleMania Creative, y'all need some help.
Hot garbage.
Yes.
So let's start NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver Wednesday night on USA. Starts with Pete Dunne against Kushida.
There is no realm in which Pete Dunne is the most technical wrestler in the world. There just isn't. I don't care what they say. I don't care what the gimmick was going into this. He is going against Kushida. If you did not see the previous takeover with Kushida and Johnny Gargano, that is match of the year quality right there. That is one of the best technical matches that I have ever seen. Kushida is a god. You can't include Pete Dunne in that. I'm sorry. It just wasn't.
No.
It wasn't. I'm not saying that it was not a good match. I was thoroughly entertained. It was a fantastic match. But calling him the best technical wrestler in the world is not accurate.
I agree. But again, these two guys wrestled for probably a good 20 minutes, barring commercial and other interruptions into their match. And it was all action. The chain wrestling that they did, move for move, beating on each other, was great.
Yeah, it was a technical showcase of both of their abilities, and I could not have been happier. The small joint manipulation that Pete Dunne brought into to kind of counter Kushida's high-speed technical style was really, really awesome to see, because not only was Pete not necessarily trying to keep up in that match, but he was able to slow Kushida down with his own pacing and stuff, but still be in that realm of a technical wrestling match. Yep. It was good. It was really well done. There was a lot of really good back and forth, a lot of really cool spots, and just bravo.
Absolutely. And to finish it with Pete Dunne gets the win over Kushida. I could have seen this going either way, but all in all, good match. Very happy with how it turned out.
Yeah. What do we have next?
So next we had the six-man gauntlet match. The two men started, which we had Swerve and, what's his name?
Ruff. Leon Ruff.
Yeah, Leon Ruff. Yeah. Sorry, drawing name blanks today.
It was a week.
It really was. So this is the six-man gauntlet match for the person that wins to face Johnny Gargano at night two.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like we said, you have Leon Ruff and you have Swerve Scott to start it off. And then you get number three, the resident thick boy, Bronson Reed.
Yeah.
I love me some Reed. I'm not going to lie to you.
He's a good big man. He really is.
He is. Then we had Cameron Grimes.
Which I gotta say, his new gimmick is pretty tight. He's doing this whole, I made a ton of money on GameStop and I'm just gonna flaunt it now, trying to be the $1 million man as a redneck.
It's so good. I was like, swamp people, but millionaires. It's like Beverly Hillbillies, but Florida edition. It's great.
It's kind of like watching Duck Dynasty.
Oh yeah, man, it's amazing. because I was getting bored with Cameron Grimes, like just him sitting there coming out as this like redneck Cajun swamp dude and then just screaming to the moon. And I was like, you kind of lost me. Now you throw in like, oh no, he's just going to throw hundreds around at people for whatever. I'm like, okay, you have my attention again. And if nothing else, this is entertaining. So that I dig it.
Yeah. I do too. You know, buying the expensive car and wrecking it, trying to pull some of the old $1 million man pranks and messing them up beyond belief. It's great. Shows you he's got great character, but he was into the match. And then we get the guy that never talks.
Dexter Lumis.
Dexter Lumis.
I continue to love Dexter Lumis.
To me, he's an interesting character. I'm just having a hard time grasping it. His in-ring work is great, but this whole character that has never said a word, only does actions, constantly staring, never seeing the guy blink, is just a little weird on me.
I saw him blink once. I think it was on accident. They didn't pan the camera away fast enough, but I saw him blink once. I love it. I can't tell you why I love it. Like, I really can't. Like, everything you said is 100% accurate, but it's just, I think it's something that's just so different that I'm all for it. Like, this is not something that you could really, they could just do on the main roster. No. Just out of nowhere, you introduce a character that never talks, just never blinks, has this crazy stare, and just pummels people. You couldn't get away with that.
No, but for NXT, it works.
But for NXT, it works. And if he gets called up, it's going to work on the main roster because he's already set the precedent in NXT. So I'm like, it's something new and different. And I kind of just want to see where it goes.
And then we have a newcomer, LA Knight, was the final competitor into this. He's an interesting person. I haven't got to see a lot of his stuff yet. So I don't necessarily have any stake in the guy.
Yeah, it's to me, I'm with you there. It's take it or leave it. I just, he looks like, okay, he's, I mean, he comes out, he pulls a heel promo, he insults everybody in the ring, and then he comes up and starts hitting people. I mean, he has a good look, and his in-ring skills are great, but I'm not going to say, you know, that whole hottest free agent thing. Like, to me personally, he hasn't shown that a whole lot. Now, like I said, I don't know the guy a whole lot. I haven't seen his other work from different federations and everything like that, so I couldn't tell you. But from what I have seen, he's good. I'm not going to say that he's great.
I'm going to say his booking's a little weird because they brought him in. He won a squash match against somebody. I don't remember who it was. Then they throw him against our big guy. Mm-hmm. Bronson Reed. They throw him against Bronson Reed for a bit in a match, and he takes the loss. So you don't necessarily know where he falls.
Right.
And then they make him the last entrant in this because he won the battle royal that set out how they were all going to enter this match. So I'm a little confused at how they're booking him. Is he a jobber or is he a good wrestler? I don't know for this guy yet. And it's going to take a little bit of time to get used to him, get warmed up to him.
Yeah.
But the ultimate winner of this was Bronson Reed. Bronson Reed moves on to face Johnny Gargano in night two.
Yeah, which I was happy with. There was a lot of really cool spots and everything. And I was happy to see the thick boy win. So
absolutely,
that was good.
So then we move on to one of the most brutal matches for a standard wrestling match.
Yeah,
I've ever seen. Walter against Tommaso Ciampa for the NXT UK Championship. And oh my God, Walter's chops are hard. At one point, Walter throws a chop to Ciampa while he's in front of the desk. And he breaks the top part of the desk with the chop.
Yeah. Like we've all seen this. We've all seen this. Like the little logo bit that's like made out of wood and you hit it and sometimes it bends and it's, you know, whatever. And they'll see it suplexed or something on it and then they bounce right off and it was not injured at all. No, that is not the case. When we say he broke it, he did a chop and snapped that piece in half. It looked like he hit it with an axe or a sledgehammer or something like that. He slaps it and it comes off.
In half. Like you can see the plywood that it's made out of, how it broke. And it wasn't a clean break that, you know, a pre-cut piece of wood. This was a nasty break.
Yeah. He just slapped it off. Like it was like watching that one episode of How I Met Your Mother. And he's talking about, like, learning all the secret slapping techniques. And he slaps the jukebox and the jukebox breaks. It was like that, but in real life.
Yeah. If Ciampa didn't move, that would have been Ciampa's chest. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. He'd have killed the man.
Yeah. That Ciampa's getting gray, man. We need him. You can't be doing that, Walter.
No.
Coming out here.
I love me some Tommaso Ciampa. Yeah. I really like that they're bringing back the his older persona of the killer.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he did take the loss in this. Walter beat him, but all in all, this was a knockdown dragout match for TV.
Yeah, it was a great match. There was a lot of actual like wrestling involved, which Walter really prides himself on. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of the I don't want to say hardcore style, but like, you know, that kind of like out of ring, more extreme-esque style that, you know, Ciampa brings to the table. There was a little bit of that, but Ciampa was just holding his own in an actual just straight up wrestling match and showcasing, yeah, guys, I am Tommaso Ciampa. I can do this. You just might have forgot that. And it was just great.
I love this match. In my opinion, match of the night from night one. Potential match of the year with these two guys just beating the tar out of each other in a legit wrestling match. But again, Walter, the longest reigning NXT UK champion, retains the title.
I think he's like longest reigning WWE champion period at this point, isn't he?
He's well over 500 days, I believe, as the NXT UK champion.
Yeah. So, I mean, that beats Asuka's record.
Yeah.
Because Asuka was the longest reigning WWE champion period, like any title holder. She was the longest reigning single one, I thought.
I think so, too. I do think he is the longest reigning champion in WWE history.
Aside from Bruno. That's because Bruno just wasn't giving that up. Nobody's going to do 5 years. If they did, it would get boring. So
That was when you didn't see a guy fight as often either. So
yeah, exactly. So next one up, we had the NXT tag titles that were vacant in a triple threat match with MSK, Grizzled Young Veterans, and was it Legado del Fantasma?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I've said this before. I'm not a fan of the luchador style. I'm just not. That is a personal thing. I fully respect their athleticism and their ability to be entertaining in the ring, but I personally don't like watching it as much. So that kind of eliminated, Legado del Fantasma for me. Mm-hmm. It just did. MSK. Hot damn.
Yeah. These guys that just show up during the Dusty Rhodes Invitational Tag Team Tournament. You've never seen them in WWE NXT before. These two guys show up. I would put them on par with early Hardy Boys for some of the stuff that they do move-wise. Not the extreme style. We haven't seen that from them yet. But just the speed and the moves that they do, I would put them on par with the early Hardy Boys.
Yeah, the feeling I get watching them is like what I got watching early Hardys, like way back in the day in their prime. You know, it's like they're doing stuff you didn't think was possible or didn't think anybody would or could do. It's like, yeah, I did that in a video game. Nobody's going to do that in real life. That's that feeling that I got when I used to watch the Hardys. When I watch MSK, that's that same feeling that I get. I'm like, wow, this is incredible. Like, this is just, these guys are incredible. And it's not just, oh, we're going from one spot to another, to another, to another or anything, which is one of the reasons one of the problems I have with the typical luchador style. They put on a match throughout that. Everything makes sense to me. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm a fan. I saw them, Dusty Classic, and I just instant fan.
Me too. I wholeheartedly agree. Yeah, their action, their constant spots, the stuff that they do flying over the ropes in the ring. These guys are going to be a hit and stars without a doubt, as long as it doesn't get screwed up and they get broken up for some god awful reason, because that seems to be a trend that we're doing recently.
Yeah. I mean, hey, until we lost them, the Revival, like, they didn't break them up. They were smart enough to keep the Revival as the Revival, and the tag team world was better off for it.
Yeah, absolutely it was. But this was a great match. I want to say Grizzled Young Veterans looked great. Completely different style than the other two teams. They're the knockdown, drag out, hold you down, just pound you. And they look great. But MSK walks away with the vacated NXT championship.
Yep. They are no longer vacant. They are belongs to MSK.
Well deserved and well earned. They definitely absolutely earned them in this case.
And then we have the night one grand finale.
Main event. NXT Women's Champion Io Shirai against Raquel Gonzalez.
The intro package alone for just this and covering both women was fantastic. It showcased how, like, incredibly dominant Io has been as champion, and it showed exactly what kind of beast Raquel Gonzalez has been since showing up, and her transition from kind of a background figure enforcer type to I'm moving on to the head of the pack. I deserve this, and I'm going to destroy everyone who stands in my way.
Absolutely. When I first saw Raquel, I thought, oh, she's just another big woman that's, again, like you said, the enforcer. She's there to cover Dakota Kai. No, she is, in the last 6-8 months, has proved herself well-deserved in this match. And Io Shirai has held, up until this match, the women's title for almost a year, because she won it from Charlotte in that triple threat with Charlotte and Rhea Ripley.
Yep.
And she's defended that title a lot. She's definitely a fighting champion for the things Io Shirai does. She fights a lot.
She does. Yeah, and her style is tough. I mean, it has to be tough on the body. Just
absolutely
doing what she does. That being said, she is a fighting champion, and she puts it out there. She is what you want to see as champion. You know, when you think of someone having the belt and going forward and being a champion, you know, holding the company on their shoulders kind of deal, that EO is in that embodiment. That's what you want to see. So
absolutely,
hats off. And it was a good match. It was a good match.
And EO gets to hit her spots in this one. You know, EO always finds something interesting during a takeover to jump off of. And this one, she decided to jump off the skull that was built at the top of the ramp. She's a fearless young lady, and she is amazing at jumping off of some of the craziest things.
I didn't even see her go up there. It was just 1 second they're like there, and Raquel's kind of down on the entrance ramp, and the next second she's standing up, and then EO just into frame. And it's like, what? When did she even climb up there? It's like, when did she climb on the top of the cage for War Games? Like, I don't even know she just does it. Nobody's paying attention.
Same thing at the takeover in your house last year. She climbed up on top of the house.
Yeah.
She just randomly ends up on the top of something to fly off of, and she hits those spots so well.
Yeah, she teleports. That's what it is. She's not climbing up there. She just teleports, and none of us see it until it's too late.
Yep. But this was a great women's match. Obviously should have been the main event of the night, and it was. EO does lose the championship. Raquel is the new NXT women's champion. We now have a monster of a champion in the women's division in NXT as the champion.
Yeah. And I don't know what this means for EO. Typically you have a long reigning dominant champion in NXT. When they lose their belt, that means that they're going to get called up soon. You know, it happened to it happened to Charlotte. It happened to Sasha Banks, Rhea Ripley. Like it happens in that order kind of thing. Well, Rhea Ripley was way later, but you know. So I don't know if this means that EO is getting ready to get called up. And part of me is like, all of me is 100% she deserves it. But part of me is like, God, I hope not. I really hope that she never gets called up. And that's not because I don't want to see her succeed. It's because I don't want NXT to lose EO.
I completely agree. I don't want NXT to lose EO. And I'm just fearful because we've all seen women get called up to the main roster and they're there for a couple months and they're doing great. They're the hot new thing. And then creative just flounders on them. And I do not want that for EO. She deserves far more than that. And she needs to be that. And not just thrown in a tag team so she can get her TV time. She is a star and creative needs to see her as that. And she needs to be on TV more.
Yeah.
And if they're not going to give her that time, leave her in NXT.
Yeah. If you don't know what to do with her, then leave her in NXT where they do. Because right now she is showcased. She is one of the main reasons that we watch, and
she's
we all get to enjoy her. She's a star. And if you're not going to know what to do, if you're not going to have a plan, don't call her up, because it's not fair to call someone up, not have a plan, and then kind of ruin their career in that regard. Because then you cut them because you have no place for them because you called them up too early and you were unprepared. She is a star. Don't you do that, creative. Absolutely. Don't you do that.
And that's night one. So on to NXT Stand and Deliver night two on Peacock.
On Peacock. So yeah, due to what did you say it was? It was due to the cop or the contracts or whatever they have. They had to have night one on USA.
I believe it's because they have the contract for NXT to be on USA Monday or Wednesday nights, which as the time you're listening to this, it is now moving to Tuesday nights on USA. But I believe it had to be NXT TakeOver night one on USA because of their weekly contract with USA. So night two ends up being Peacock, like a standard NXT TakeOver pay-per-view.
Okay, so that was a little weird. And then night two was exclusively on Peacock. But, you know, hey, whatever. It's fine. We're working out they're working out the camp. Don't blame me for this. I didn't call this. I was happy to have the network. Also, did you guys know that you cannot go back and start from the beginning for Peacock, like during a live event? So if you...
I know
like,
they were working with that with WrestleMania. It is a... we don't want to call it a bug. I guess in the computer world, they call that a feature that they're actually working on adding in the future. Peacock, I think, was a little behind the times on realizing that some people like to pause and go to the restroom during a 4-hour pay-per-view or back it up and rewatch a match because, you know, the dog had to go potty.
Or sometimes start a little late.
Or you need to start it a little later. Peacock is aware. I've had some lucky interactions with them on Twitter, in the Twitterverse, where they've actually said that's something that they are working on. It was supposed to be a feature that was added for WrestleMania if you're using the iOS app or certain TV apps. But if you run Peacock on your web browser, you can't yet. And I know they're supposedly working on that.
Awesome. So all of our millions upon millions upon millions of Adams making up our current fan base, get out there and maybe send them an email or a tweet, or whatnot, and just let them know that, hey, Peacock, dear friends, we would like these features to be able to pause or rewind or start late from the beginning during a live thing. Also, we would love it if you would put your app as a fully functional app on the Amazon web store. That would be great.
Absolutely.
Fire TV users like myself would love that. Because
I have a Samsung Smart TV and they don't have the app for the Samsung Smart TV yet. Supposedly they're in talks with Samsung on that. They have tweeted that out a couple times. Mm-hmm. My biggest irritant with Peacock at the moment, and I know WWE's new to their thing, is you can't go watch pay-per-views in chronological order right now, unless you research and know when a pay-per-view happened. Unlike on the network, you used to be able to go pay-per-view by year and watch them in chronological order. So if you just wanted to watch the pay-per-views, you could still catch up with the stories via those pay-per-views.
Yeah.
Right now on Peacock, the only way to watch them is go, I want to watch Royal Rumble. And then it's going to give you a list of every Royal Rumble that they did.
Yeah. And I mean, some people like out there were like, well, why would you want to do that? We're in 2021. Why not just watch the latest or whatever? Because.
I missed a few years of WWE. I want to go back and watch those old pay-per-views. And I prefer watching them in chronological order. You know, I want to see the John Cena, Randy Orton back and forth when they traded titles 8 times in 2010.
Also WWE released the Attitude Era Raw and SmackDown series. Like they just put it out there. Like, here you go. Here's the Attitude Era. Go ahead and watch from 1998 to 2001 or whatever it was. You can watch all of those Raws, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you only get half the thing if you don't get the pay-per-view because, you know, you build up to the story and then you don't have the the ending to the story or whatever from the pay-per-view. Yeah. So, yes, we would like to be able to watch and then watch the pay-per-view and then watch more and then, you know, chronological order, guys. It makes sense, okay? It makes sense.
There's the soapbox. I'll get off it now and talk about NXT Stand and Deliver Night 2. First That's match fine. Of the night, unification, cruiserweight unification championship ladder match, Santos Escobar and Jordan Devlin.
This was a good match. I kind of like the whole, like, I'm champion, no, I'm champion deal, and both had, like, pretty legit claims to the title, and yeah. Nope, we're just going to unify it. Ladder match, boom, we're good. You know, and you get, like I said before, you get into these gimmick matches, and sometimes you don't expect a lot out of them. You just basically, it's an excuse to watch guys beat each other with chairs and ladders and tables and whatnot. But this was really well done.
Yeah.
Both guys went in and they legitimately wrestled intermittently in between, you know, the ladder spots and everything.
I'm going to say my highlight of this match is Jordan Devlin standing on the very top of a ladder and does this beautiful moonsault landing perfectly on Santos Escobar.
Yeah.
It was gorgeous.
Yeah, people don't moonsault from the top of ladders.
Cool. And that when you cool. look at where Santos is laying, he looks like he's laying too close to the ladder mm-hmm. to where Jordan had to actually adjust and just kind of went up, flipped, and came down instead of doing this long, drawn-out moonsault halfway across the ring. It was just a beautiful, beautiful moonsault. I don't know what else to say about it, but that was a high spot of that match.
Yeah. Like I said, it was a decent match. I'm not going to say it was the, like, match of the night, or it's not going to be match of the year or anything, but it was a good match. It was a good kickoff. It was entertaining. Santos Escobar managed to put Devlin through a ladder, and I almost said table, through a ladder and climb and pull the belts down. And he is your undisputed cruiserweight champion.
Yeah. So second of the night, we end up with the new NXT tag team, women's tag team. Yes, now NXT has a women's tag team belt, which is well deserved. They probably should have had that a long time ago.
Yeah.
They added it in the last month. But Ember Moon and Shotzi Blackheart are your women tag team champions, going against Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell of The Way.
This was good. And I mean, Indy Hartwell's okay. She's all right in the ring. She's not my favorite. Candice plays her role very well. Like that poison pixie thing of her being like a smaller person. Like she plays on that. Like it's like watching like Alexa Bliss go, and it's good. You know, it's like she is playing that part and she plays it very well. Yeah. I don't have anything to say about Shotzi Blackheart or Ember Moon. They're your women's tag champions for a reason.
We all know Ember Moon. I'm just going to say watching Shotzi in the ring scares me at times. This woman does things that make you think she's going to kill herself and she's going to die in the ring. And she pulls it off and it looks amazing. But you're like, oh my God, girl, you're really going to hurt yourself if you keep doing that. But she's a daredevil, and that's what she loves to do, and she does it well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, I was watching that match, and I'm like, oh, she broke her neck. She did a suicide dive, and nope, she broke her neck. She didn't.
No,
I don't know. She's made of rubber or something. I don't know. But, yeah. And I love this because ever since teaming up, like, Shotzi was cool in her own right, you know, but she was kind of in this weird limbo area of like, yes, we really like her, but we're not going to put her in a consistent storyline or anything. We're not going to put her up really for the title and all that other stuff. But then you put her in a tag team and she shines. It's like a new ray of confidence has awoken inside of her and she has just come to life.
Absolutely. She unfortunately was a floundering mid-card women's wrestler, but teaming her with a former NXT champion, and Ember Moon, she shines.
And yeah.
She, Ember knows how to draw something out of her as a partner that they're both able to shine in the ring and do these amazing things.
Yeah, it's fantastic stuff to watch. And Ember seems to be having fun, which is huge because, you know, like not only is Shotzi getting more, like seems like she's more confident and just giving us more because she feels happier in this like situation, but Ember's just having fun as a tag team partner, like as a part of the tag team. And it's showing through. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. They should be the women's tag champions.
Absolutely.
Like they just keep putting on awesome, awesome matches. Like, why not? So yeah.
I enjoy them as the women's tag team champion. It's a good pairing. They carry themselves well and they're great in the ring. And it seems like no matter who they're going up against, they know how to make their opponents shine as well as they shine.
Indeed. So they come away with the win and still women's tag team champions, Ember Moon and Shotzi Blackheart. So then we have the North American title match with Johnny Gargano against the gauntlet match winner, Bronson Reed. This was better than it should have been, I think.
I agree.
Honestly, like you put the two together and their styles don't mix. You have an ultra, ultra technical genius in Johnny Gargano. And you have Bronson Reed, who is a bulldozer, a very fast moving, very agile bulldozer, but a bulldozer. And it did not seem like it should have worked out, but it did. This was a great match. I liked this match a lot.
I did too. I enjoyed it. Seeing Johnny, who is your smaller person, obviously you'd assume underdog other than he's Johnny Takeover, Johnny Wrestling against the thick boy, Bronson Reed. These two guys were great. I enjoyed this match.
Yeah, the real winning combination that I see with this is Bronson's size played to both of their advantages. He was able to kind of blow off some of the moves that Johnny was giving him, mm-hmm. and still look strong because he's a bigger dude. But his size also allowed him to kind of be, you know, that statue, that wall, that anchor for Johnny to do some of the cool stuff that Johnny does. You know, yeah. He's like, yeah, I'm super, like, I'm a bigger dude. I'm strong. I can just catch you out of midair. Yeah, I can hold you up as you do this weird whatever. You know, like, he can mm-hmm. do that. And that super worked out because it allowed Johnny more flexibility to maybe do stuff that he's not able to do with someone like Tommaso Ciampa or Kushida or, you know, somebody like that.
Yeah, it lets him be more of the high flyer and know that he's going to get caught and whatever happens in the ring is going to be safe.
Yeah. So, like I said, it was a good match.
Yeah.
Johnny Gargano comes away with the win after, I think, how many one final beats did he hit?
He hit two of them in a row.
One final beats or something. Yeah. He hit him. He hit Bronson Reed with two of them in a row. To end the match, but I think it was like three or four total throughout the match. It was crazy. But yeah, Johnny Gargano comes away with a victory and is still your North American champion.
Yep. Not sad by any means. I'm glad Johnny's the champion. He deserves it. And he carries it well with his ego of the way. And
yes,
not sad at all. He's a good heel.
He is. And he's a good champion. And, I would have liked to see Bronson win just to kind of, you know, pass it along and, you know, maybe get it to Johnny again down the road or something, but I get it. And this was a nice opportunity for Bronson to actually get out there and really shine in a, you know, in the higher stakes match.
In a pay-per-view setting.
Yeah, exactly. You know, get that spotlight on him.
So moving on to co-main events, and it's weird to say this, the NXT Championship goes before the main event. You've got Finn Balor. Oh, go ahead.
This is the last sanctioned match of the pay-per-view.
There you go.
So it was the main event of the pay-per-view as far as the legal matches go.
Yeah. So Finn Balor against Karrion Kross.
I have been looking forward to this. Not only Kross coming back and just like from injury and everything like that, but seeing what he's going to bring to the table against Finn Balor. We all know what Finn Balor brings to the table. We all know his in-ring stature and everything. And that's part of the reason why he's NXT champion. He's holding the brand and he can because he's Finn Balor.
Yep.
Say what you want about the dude. He is talented.
I enjoyed the short story going into this as well, because you end up Finn Balor goes back and forth with the Undisputed Era, which I will shed a tear in a little bit about that. Going against Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish and Adam Cole. Finn Balor finishes with them and he's doing in the ring, and all of a sudden the camera's on tight on his face and he goes, "What took you so long?"
Yep.
And the camera pulls out and Karrion Kross is standing right behind him going, "TikTok." I got chills. Just that short buildup into this match was all I needed to be fired up.
That was
what these two guys were going to do in the ring.
That was it. Just having Balor just look there and just like shake his head. You're like, "What took you so long?" You know, it's like, "Yeah, I knew you were coming." I'm like, "Oh man, this is so good." And like, we knew. And I will say, they did not disappoint.
Not at all.
And Karrion Kross is not a small man. However, he's not your typical giant where he's just, "I'm Hulk Smash, I'm super strong, no sell," kind of style or whatever. Like, the man has legit wrestling skills. Like, he is pretty gifted in the ways of technical wrestling. So this was really cool to be able to see both men throw around their weight, as it were, you know, so to speak. And also, you know, just have a really physical match at the same time.
I will say, after, you know, we've seen Karrion Kross in some interesting matches prior to his injury against Keith Lee, where he got himself hurt wrestling a big guy. And this match against Finn Balor, your average size guy, I prefer seeing him wrestle the average size guy because he does get to show his strength, but he also gets to show his wrestling skill. Where with the bigger guys, some of the wrestling skill gets lost because you're just used to seeing them just beat the tar out of each other.
Yeah, exactly.
So I really enjoyed this match. You know, Finn Balor is going to throw a banger of a match out there, but for Karrion Kross to be on his level and be able to do what he did in the ring with him was outstanding.
Yeah. Actually, at one point, it was either really good acting or he actually did hit him. But when he kicked him for that quote unquote liver shot, I think he might have actually accidentally kicked him in the liver, because Kross was like, "Oh, you hit me. Oh, God, you hit me." And he dropped.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, that's a liver shot."
I was like, that's a
liver shot. And if you've never been punched or kicked or anything in the liver, if you watch, like, step outside WWE, go just Google UFC or MMA or whatever, like, professional fighting liver shots, it is brutal. Like, it is one of the most debilitating pains that you can have. Like, your body just says nope. It just nopes out on you from the inside out, and you crumple. Like, there's nothing you can do. So if he did actually catch a liver shot on accident, then yeah, that's how you would have reacted. But then he kept going. Like, he's like, "Nope, fine. I'm going to lay here. I'm going to catch my breath. And then we're going to keep having this match, because I'm not going to let a little thing like a kick to the liver stop me."
Yeah. No, these two guys, so much fun to watch. Karrion Kross gets the win for the belt.
Yep.
I don't know what that's going to mean for Finn Balor going forward, because we know Karrion Kross deserved the belt. Unfortunately, when he won the belt from Keith Lee, he got hurt, so he didn't even get to defend the belt. So truly still undefeated in NXT. I want to say he's somewhere between 17 and 20 and 0 undefeated. I'm happy to see him get the belt back. Sad that it had to be this way. I'm interested to see what he can do as champion, but I want to know what they're going to do with Finn Balor going forward. I believe he should be in the main roster again, but I don't want to see him get stuck in flounder like they did to him before he came back to NXT and has been a star helping NXT grow.
Mm-hmm. So then moving on to the last match of the night, we had Kyle O'Reilly.
Can we pause? Toll the bell.
Yes.
Shed a tear. The Undisputed Era is gone.
R.I.P. R.I.P. UE. R.I.P.
As I'm sure anybody who's listened to me talk about the Undisputed Era, I'm an Adam Cole fanboy. I love the Undisputed Era. I thought they were probably the best stable going, and now they're gone.
They're gone.
I'm sad.
This is it though. Like, this could be the catalyst. You know, like, this could be what brings them to the main roster. Yeah. So, I mean, we don't, like, you know, there is no UE. If there is no UE, then there's no reason to hold them back.
Adam Cole even has new music now. It's not the Undisputed Era music.
Yeah.
And I almost wanted to cry. I was so sad just knowing that that era is gone.
Yeah. It's undisputed.
Sad days, so but sad. This match was a banger. These two guys, I think, wanted to actually kill each other.
Yeah, and if not, they played it off really well. You had Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole going one-on-one in it's not a match. I mean, it's not sanctioned. They're quote-unquote not sanctioned. It was just a war. It was a war inside and outside and just in that arena.
These two guys beat the snot out of each other and then beat each other some more. They use chains, they use chairs, they use tables, they use kendo sticks. They used everything but the kitchen sink to beat the life out of each other.
Yeah. I don't have words. Like, just go watch it. Just go watch it. It's sad because it is like that realization that nope, the UE is gone. At least for now, the UE is gone, and that sucks. But man, yeah. It went out with a bang. Like,
it did. Oof. It absolutely did. And the finisher of the night is Adam Cole sets this folding chair upside down to where the four legs are sticking out. And you're like, what the heck is he going to do? And somehow it ends up Adam Cole's laying across the four legs and Kyle O'Reilly drops this knee with a chain wrapped around his leg onto his head to finish the match. Just the things these guys did. I don't know what else to say other than just go watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, just go watch it. That there's nothing else to say.
And thus ends NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver 2-night special of WrestleMania week.
Indeed. All right, let's see. We have then
moving on to the show of shows, the greatest spectacle of the world.
The showcase of the immortals.
Yeah.
Dot dot dot. We say dot 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 because how are you going to follow what we just described to you?
The short answer is
you're not.
The WrestleMania starts for the first time with fans in over a year. It starts with America the Beautiful with all of the superstars, including Vince McMahon and the McMahon family, standing on the entryway. You can see the emotion in all of the superstars' faces. They show Rhea Ripley. She's crying. They show a couple other people that have tears. The emotion of the spectacle that for a year they've gone without the WWE Universe fans in attendance. And they finally get that back. And then there's a rain delay.
Yep.
That's how weather, WrestleMania starts.
Weather wins weather. WrestleMania. There's no stopping that. I will say this, okay? I will, as mad as I am, and I am mad, make no mistake, I am mad at the fact that they had live people at WrestleMania, because we are still in the middle of a pandemic, and apparently Florida has no laws. For you, those of you who are listening in Germany and Korea and Ireland, because we have people that listen in there. Yeah, I look at my statistics. For those of you that do not live in America and don't know what Florida is, it is a land. It is a lawless land of alligators and meth.
Yeah.
For those of you who are in Florida, you know what you did. You can't sit here and flame blast me for saying the truth about your state. Just like we live like out on the West Coast with a bunch of granola eating hippies that enjoy kale salads. You deal with Florida man and alligators. It's the way of the world. So since there's no laws in Florida, they let they sold tickets. We have live event allowed in Florida. They sold tickets. People all across the world came to Florida, and there were no barriers. There was no spacing. There were no mask requirements. It was anarchy. And it upset me because now there's probably going to be a bunch of people that get sick.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's probably turned into a COVID hotspot.
Yeah. Because that spread it around the
welcome
world.
Welcome to Florida.
Yep. That spread it around the world because, you know, it's not just going to stay in Florida. People come from around the world to go to WrestleMania.
We as a country, we're starting to do so well with the vaccines rolling out. If they could have just followed the simple rules that the rest of the country is using. But no. Half the people that showed up on camera weren't wearing masks. I will say thank you to those that are listening to us that were there in person and actually wearing their masks properly. Thank you for being a good person.
Yes. Thank you for trying. I don't begrudge anybody wanting to go to WrestleMania or going to WrestleMania.
No, I wanted to go.
I wanted to go. Like, I would have been, you know, I almost, like, wanted to buy tickets. Like, no joke. But seeing how they implemented just having live people in there, they just literally were like, okay, here we go. There's a live audience. Just fill up the floor shoulder to shoulder like a normal WrestleMania. Yeah. And it was really disappointing to see, especially the fact that they've had outbreaks in the performance center and things like that. Like, they've had wrestlers dealing with COVID throughout this. They've had outbreaks happen inside the company and everything. And they still decided to do this because Florida said, okay.
Yep. Disappointing. I'm going to ring the bell. Shame, shame.
Yes.
Shame, shame.
Yes. But now, the flip side to that, this did not feel like a normal event. We have gone about a year in the Thunderdome with no audience and looking at LED screens and pumped in audio. And this did not feel like that.
No, this felt like a WrestleMania should feel with a minimal audience.
Yeah.
And the show ultimately starts off with our hosts. Our hosts, Titus O'Neil and the immortal Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
I wish he wasn't immortal.
I do too. Like, hey, look, respect to the man for what he did. I get it. He did bring the company to heights during the 80s, and he was part of the force that drove the NWO and, you know, really helped not only usher in but move forward the Monday Night Wars and the Attitude Era. That being said, was past. We bring him out and everything, and he still talks like he's from the 80s. Like, he's still holding on to his old gimmicks and stuff and in a speaking style and everything. And when you hear modern day people get on the mic and talk and give you those promos that are so good, you can't have Hulk Hogan go out there and just spout out nonsense about, well, let me tell you something, brother. WrestleMania is so great. And I'll tell you another thing, brother. It doesn't work.
We've got promos that are coming out in 2020, and he's still spitting promos from 1980.
Yeah.
It's sad. He has not evolved past the NWO. His character stopped there and actually regressed back into the say your prayers, eat your vitamins, Hulk Hogan brother. And it was bad. And it was so bad that you could even hear fans boo him when he spoke.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing with the live audience. There was no pumped in audio. So, we actually got to hear what the responses were.
And hopefully Vince and team listen to that, and we start seeing a whole lot less of Hulk Hogan in the future.
Yeah. We can only pray.
So,
but anyway, they're the hosts. They came out, they did their thing. We kicked off night one of WrestleMania with the WWE Championship. And I don't know if this was actually true, but I liked how they covered it. Of Drew McIntyre saying that he wanted to be the first person to walk down the ramp with the audience live in over a year.
I wouldn't be surprised, and he deserved it. I mean,
yeah.
Honestly, my opinion, Drew carried the company for the last year. What we'll call the COVID era of sports entertainment, Drew McIntyre carried the company, in my opinion. So he deserved to be the first one to come out and feel the energy from the audience. And you could see in his face when the audience hit back at him, that energy helped him. And it was just a great image to me.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Yeah, I have nothing to say about this other than getting into the match. The match was physical, but which you expect, Drew is not the most technical wrestler. Bobby Lashley is definitely not the most technical wrestler, but they are both big gentlemen. They are both strong, and they both are impressive in what they do. So this was a very physical match, and I was actually surprised. I was entertained.
It was an entertaining match. I will say I'm a little disappointed in the storytelling of this match, because I really think WWE Creative, and it's a creative problem, thinks us WWE fans in the WWE universe have short memories. They wanted us to forget that Drew McIntyre defended the title against Bobby Lashley at Backlash last year and beat him.
Yeah.
So now we've reversed the role. Bobby Lashley's the champion, and they want us to think that Drew McIntyre is the underdog. When in my brain, I'm saying, but Drew beat him handily a year ago.
Yep. I don't know what happens in a year, but apparently it was a lot. Actually, the one thing I didn't like, too, was the MVP interference.
Yeah.
Because it was unnecessary. You could have just had Bobby Lashley drop down and dodge the Claymore and sink in the Hurt Lock. You could have just had that happen without MVP. It was a cheapened move, and it didn't help Bobby Lashley look any strong. Because Bobby Lashley held his own. Yeah, he held his own, and he looked plenty strong just on his own in that match. So,
but I will say, Bobby Lashley wins with the Hurt Lock. Drew didn't tap out. Drew passed out.
Yes.
So he can say he didn't tap out. Bobby Lashley just put him to sleep with it. Kudos to them. Bobby Lashley looks strong, retains the title. Drew McIntyre still looks great because he didn't get pinned and he didn't tap.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not mad at the match. I just
It was a good match. WrestleMania. That was a great way to start.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, other than some other high spots, it went downhill.
Yeah. Then we had a tag team turmoil match with basically to become the first the number one contenders for the women's tag titles. You had Naomi and Lana versus Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke versus Natalya and Tamina versus the Riot Squad versus Carmella and Billie Kay. That was a lot of names.
It was, and it was a lot going on. And I will say there was a lot of in-ring goodness that happened, but I'm going to highlight two things that actually happened outside the ring that were my highlight of this match. Mandy Rose slipping on the wet ramp. Unfortunately, it was an accident. She didn't mean to slip. It was funny, and we all know that going forward, they'll probably beat it into the ground that she slipped. But the one that actually made me laugh the best was Carmella and Billie Kay coming to the ring. Carmella's doing her thing, looking all hot like she does, and Billie Kay is just trying to mimic her in the most comedic way possible, but still trying to look prim, proper, and attractive, was just the highlight to me. Of obviously Billie Kay doesn't take herself super serious, and I love that about her. She is a star when it comes to doing these funny spots.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not gonna put her up with Peyton Royce and have them be the Iconics, and you're just gonna have her be the comedy role, fine. She owns that. Yes. And I mean, like, people, look, you have Goldust and you have R-Truth and, you know, some other people like them have made a Hall of Fame worthy career off of that. Like, you can send the hate mail to me, I don't care. R-Truth deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely.
He is the most decorated champion in WWE history. If you don't believe me, look up the facts, how many times he has won the 24/7 championship. Most decorated. He has more title wins than anybody. Goldust evolved his character so many times over the years in so many different ways. I mean, just endlessly entertaining. Billie Kay absolutely has that ability to just be entertaining. I'm not saying like, oh, she doesn't deserve the title or anything like that, because she's fantastic in the ring too. But I mean, hey, if you're going to put her in that role, then fine, put her in that role. Let her run with it, because is fantastic.
Creative gave her a bag of lemons and Billie Kay made a lemon meringue pie.
Yeah, she did. Oh, man. So good. So good.
I loved it. And that was my high spot of this match, was just that entrance and how they did it. The match all in all was good. I can't say that I'm happy with the winners. It was Natalya and Tamina. I feel like Creative, for some reason, is trying to push them over as the good guy baby faces in this, when Natalya has been more of a heel in the last year than a baby face. So I'm kind of confused about that. You've got teams like Naomi and Lana and the Riot Squad that, in my opinion, far more deserving of a win and a title shot.
Yeah. I mean, but I will always go to bat for Liv Morgan. Liv Morgan is one of the most underrated superstars on the roster. She is amazing. And that's not saying anything against Ruby Riott either. Ruby is fantastic also. I think that the Riot Squad should be tag champions.
Absolutely. Like,
they are a very skilled tag team, and they are quite entertaining to watch in the ring. They were like legitimately one of, like, you have two people putting together and being a quote unquote tag team in a tag team match, and then you have tag teams. The Riot Squad is a tag team. They're not two people that have been thrown together. So
they work well together. They know how to work. They're undersized and they work well.
Yeah. So like Webb mentioned, it's Natty and Tamina that come away with the win and become the number one contenders to face Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax in night two.
I do gotta say, I'm happy that they've gone to the two-night WrestleMania, because a six-hour-long WrestleMania is a bit much.
It is a lot. But you don't get... So here's my thing with that. And my just one little brief snippet as I've been ranting for the last hour. When you have a two-night event like this, you don't have a true main event.
No.
So you have a main event on night one, you have a main event on night two, but neither one can be definitively say, I am the main event of WrestleMania. You can't say that. So, I mean, you know, like, you can't have that iconic spot of, you know, that we had with Charlotte and Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch main eventing WrestleMania. They were probably going to be the last women that will ever main event WrestleMania proper. Like, properly Correct. Main event WrestleMania. And that sucks. That super sucks that people aren't going to get that opportunity, because now you don't have that dream of winning Royal Rumble and main eventing WrestleMania.
You have to main event one of two nights.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my only irk.
It does tame a little bit.
But we do get two nights. It gets to break it up. Now you get 2 3-4 hour sessions, or, you know, events, and it gives a lot more room for spotlighting more talent. So
that as we say that, I'm going to throw another slap at creative, because there's one title that did not make it into WrestleMania.
Wait, the what title could that be?
SmackDown tag team titles got defended on SmackDown the night before. So they didn't get a match at WrestleMania.
What were you thinking, creative?
BS.
Why? Why do you take the SmackDown tag titles and not defend them on that? Oh, by the way, people, you know how much I love kickoff shows. You know how much I love kickoff shows. They had 2 1-hour-long kickoff shows, one for each night. And as much as I hate the fact that they hold title matches on the kickoff shows, they couldn't even make room on two 1-hour-long kickoff shows for a title match. Instead, they held it on SmackDown the night before.
Isn't the Andre Giant Memorial Battle Royal typically done at WrestleMania on a kickoff show?
I think it was exclusively WrestleMania Web. Exclusive WrestleMania thing.
Can you guess when they did that?
But they had to have done it during the kickoff show, because I mean, no, they did it that one year when it was on actual WrestleMania, but then they bumped it down to the kickoff show only. So it was there, right?
How about it was on SmackDown the night before as well?
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So plenty of time to showcase your superstars at WrestleMania with a crowd. You missed your Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal that was lackluster at best, and Jey Uso gets the win because, you know, he's the SmackDown main eventer, I guess.
Yeah.
And your SmackDown Tag Team Championship doesn't get defended at WrestleMania.
So, okay, so here's all of what you just said, what this says to me. Is we are not getting good ratings on SmackDown. Raw is kicking our ass on SmackDown, and we need to bring more eyes to SmackDown. So we're going to have a title match for the tag team titles on SmackDown versus WrestleMania, because that'll bring more people in. Oh, we still need more people. What if we also had the Andre Battle Royal on SmackDown? That'll definitely bring more eyes to SmackDown and everything, because we need the ratings. It doesn't help creative. What helps is if you had an actual storyline that supported your champion or the championships on your show. Stop giving us this garbage where Roman Reigns is a paper champion and needs to have help every single time, and actually let him be Roman Reigns with the freaking title. Or give it to somebody who will, and give us some decent storylines, and guess what? People will watch your show.
Absolutely.
You don't have to take things away from WrestleMania to try and pick you up. It doesn't work that way. Get better. Sorry. I have feelings. I'm very angry at creative right now.
It was some of these very choices. Sloppily done, and it was sad. And I'm very disappointed in creative in this last year of how they've showcased some of their titles, but to just blatantly leave them off of a pay-per-view is a slap in the face of the people that they've given the titles to and the fans that actually want to see those titles defended.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of these people, like some of these guys, they want to work tag teams. They are tag team wrestlers. They're not singles competitors. They don't want to be singles competitors. They working their entire goal in life is that is their pinnacle. And you're spitting in their face because you're not giving them a WrestleMania moment because you decide that you need more viewers on SmackDown. That's garbage. That's lazy. And you should be ashamed of yourselves.
So we should get off our soapbox and move on to this lackluster event.
Hey, we're the next ones with the microphones. We never get off our soapboxes.
Next match, I will say, is a standout of night one. Cesaro in a grudge match against Seth Rollins.
Oh, man.
And I'm so glad Cesaro's finally getting a chance to be in a singles match at WrestleMania.
Just let that sink in, people. Cesaro and Seth Rollins. It is as good. That match is as good, if not better, than you are imagining right now. I'm just saying. That match was fantastic.
Can I just say it's sad to me in 2021 that this is the first time Cesaro's had a singles match at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I don't understand. I have never understood, and I will never understand. Like, Cesaro is one of the hardest working wrestlers in the world. Not in the company, in the world. He is one of the most entertaining wrestlers in the world. He is one of the best wrestlers in the world. The fact that Cesaro hasn't had that opportunity or whatever, because I don't even know. Because Vince decides that he's not actually reaching up for the brass ring or something, is absolute garbage.
Yep.
Cesaro should have been a heavyweight champion by now, at least a couple times over. If The Miz can be, and I'm not taking anything away from The Miz because The Miz is great in his own right, but if The Miz can be a two-time heavyweight champion, or three-time, I don't know, at least two, and
he's a two-time Grand Slam champion.
Two-time Grand Slam champion. Come away from the main event of WrestleMania victorious with the title. Cesaro should have gotten one at least. Yeah. I'm just saying. The man is too good not to. And I don't know if it's upper management that just doesn't like him. Or if creative just doesn't know what the, you know, what the business end of a pen looks like. But it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, that Cesaro hasn't had any more success other than a mid-card title.
And if it's creative's problem that they don't think he's good on the mic, give him a mouthpiece. Give him somebody like Paulie or somebody else that can be a manager that just can't wrestle anymore. Give him a mouthpiece and let him show his skills. The man is probably one of the most talented people in the WWE right now. I will say he's probably one of the most talented people in wrestling worldwide right now.
Yeah, Brock cannot talk for anything. Brock should never open his mouth other than to smile menacingly at someone, period. If he's in the WWE, Brock Lesnar should not be given a microphone, ever. That being said, you put Paul Heyman down, like, on the mic next to him, let him talk for Brock, and you let Brock do what Brock does in the ring, and now he's suddenly a championship star. Why can't you do the same thing to Cesaro? Because I guarantee you, like, he has been, like, I mean, he's just, over the years, he's been in some of the greatest matches, like, of the last decade.
I will say, and I don't have a problem with Cesaro's mic skills. In fact, he was on a talking smack, I want to say right after Fastlane, talking about his love of wrestling. And the man's promo on talking smack made me feel for him and made me believe that Cesaro should be a champion hands down because of his love for the business and the love of what he does.
Yeah, I don't feel like there's anything wrong with Cesaro. Like, nothing. Cesaro, in my mind, should have been a champion, should be the champion. Like, and not like a champion. He should be the champion. like, you know, I'm not talking Intercontinental, not talking US. I'm like, he should be the Universal. He should be the heavyweight like that. He one of those two.
Yeah. He needs one of the top two titles right now.
Yeah, he needs it. And I mean, it's just it's a slap in the face to everyone who's trying to work as hard as he does and do the things and dedicate the things that ever all the things that he does to his business to not reward him with that. It sucks. That's just it.
He's far better than the mid-card talent that creative keeps tossing him at.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway. I will say Seth Rollins definitely helped show his talent.
Yes.
Because we all know Seth Rollins is a great in-ring performer. And I believe Seth Rollins actually brought out some of the best things that I've seen Cesaro do. These guys were great. I enjoyed this match hands down. Like I said, probably the match of the night for night one for me.
Yeah, for sure. This was definitely my my pick for match of the night for night one, if not for WrestleMania, period. On to the Raw Tag Team Championships. Now we have the tag team, the 11-time tag team champions, the New Day.
And let me interrupt real quick. They actually got brought out because, as we all are aware, WWE Creative, for some reason, has split up the New Day and put Big E on SmackDown and Kofi and Xavier on Raw. But Big E got to do their entrance with them.
It was glorious.
And it was great to see and hear.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And then they went against the newly formed tag team of AJ Styles and making his in-ring debut, right?
Yeah, first match.
First match, yeah, because he's been in the ring and he's beat up people. But anyway, AJ Styles and Omos. First off, Omos is a big man. Yeah. We actually looked this up. He is 7'3". He makes everyone else look very tiny, and it's kind of funny.
You're about lost for words just like I am.
AJ was great.
The New Day was great.
The New Day was great.
I mean, you almost tried. Expected out of those three. And I love how the match started.
Yeah.
The New Day focusing on AJ Styles, keeping him away from Omos. They did a great job.
Yeah, no, they did. And it was classic. It was like we said before, or like I said before, it's the difference between a tag team and people who have been thrown together. The New Day is a tag team. And they were showing that. It was classic, classic tag team wrestling against AJ, keeping him away from Omos until they didn't.
So Omos gets in the ring and it just becomes a squash match.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, because I don't know if Omos is just not skilled or he's still in training or they're just treating him as a big guy. But right now, all I see is the image of Great Khali.
Yeah.
In Omos' skin.
Yeah. And I mean, yes, Great Khali is a Hall of Famer, but that's because he's bringing in the eyes from India. And that's a lot of money that Vince doesn't want to lose out on. Let's be honest here. Look down deep down into your souls, people, and ask yourself, is the Great Khali really a Hall of Famer? You know the answer. You know. So it's just the little things that I found almost. It just looks green to me. It looks like he has potential. Like, he's obviously huge. And he's learning and everything. But he just seems that he's just green. You know, the little things like, okay, he's not holding on to the corner rope for the tag matches, but he's reaching out with his right hand instead of his left hand. So he's not even giving the illusion of being
locked. He's using his turnbuckle hand over the hand that's actually going to get him the reach.
Exactly.
To reach AJ. And I understand.
Yeah. So he totally disconnects him from the corner. It breaks that illusion. He totally disconnects him from the corner and is just like, well, then why aren't you just reaching from the middle of the ring? Because why not at that point? You know, so it's just little things like that that just kind of show all the little intricate details that go into a match to make it believable. And you can really see that he's not there yet. Like, he doesn't know those things, or doesn't, those aren't instinctive or what have you.
Yeah, that's about all I got to say about that match. Disappointing. Unfortunately, the New Day loses. Well, but the good side is eventually they'll become the 12-time tag team champions.
They will become the 12-time tag team champions. If they keep this going, I'm wondering if WWE at this point, since it kind of we've stumbled onto like an Undertaker streak situation where nobody knew about the streak until it was like 12 or 13 in, and they're like, oh, well, the streak is a thing. Maybe New Day is coming up on, I mean, they are the second highest decorated tag team in all of WWE history, behind the Dudleys, with 18, mm-hmm. with credited with 18 tag title wins. Now those are going back to ECW and WCW, and got counted in since they got absorbed into WWE.
Yeah.
So that's what those numbers come from. Realistically, I think they only had 10.
I believe in
WWE. So we've already passed that point. But I'm wondering if WWE is going for like 19 or 20, like to make them the most decorated tag team of all time, legitimately. Maybe. So I don't know. Like, that's it's always interesting to see what they do with New Day, because that team has like evolved and not evolved and has just been consistently entertaining for like the last, what, 9 years, 10 years?
Yeah, I believe it's 10 years now that they've been together as the New Day. And I'm so glad that Big E's getting his singles title run and push, but I really want to see them bring the New Day back together. I love the three of them together, whether it's a singles title push and they're all supporting that person, or they pull the Freebird rule and take more tag team titles. I want to see the three guys back together.
Yeah. They used the Freebird rule so well. Like, I loved watching that. Like, you never really knew which of them was going to be in there. So it was great. Okay, so enough gushing about New Day and our sadness that they lost the titles. Shane McMahon versus Braun Strowman in a steel cage match.
I'm sad to say this. It was a slow build to Brains against Braun.
Yeah.
I think is how they were trying to put it. But they didn't actually say that until like the Raw prior to WrestleMania.
Yeah. It was like, okay, it's your classic bully angle or whatever. Like, okay, kind of weird since they have the whole Be a Star program that they do where they encourage anti-bullying. So,
and Shane McMahon's the bully.
Yeah. But you know, whatever, fine. You're going into it. We want Shane McMahon to get his teeth kicked down his throat.
I really think that these spots are, let's see if we can kill Shane McMahon at WrestleMania.
I think that's where we're getting to the point. Like, the man is not young, but Shane, if you are listening, respect. Like, dude, my wife legitimately thought you died. My wife was watching. She's like, he's dead. They killed Shane McMahon on TV. So, well done, sir. Yeah. For those of you that don't know, they did all kinds of stuff. Like, Shane was taunting, he got over the rope and stuff, and then like it looked legitimately like for a second that Braun, like, he grabbed his hand and he looked for a second like he was gonna pull him through the cage. Just meat grinder Shane McMahon back into the ring, like Celebrity Deathmatch style. Like
he was grated cheese.
No, instead Braun Strowman just grabs the cage and rips it off the hinges, like literally rips the cage off of the support structures and pulls Shane McMahon back in. Then brings him up to the top of the cage and throws him off of the top of the cage.
Yeah.
That was a bump, though.
That was a hard bump to not hit a table or anything else to kind of cushion, right? that bump.
And it was picture perfect. Like that, yeah. That watching that, the just
50-year-old Shane McMahon landing that bump.
That 5-second clip, you could take that to the performance center and have that on the as the instructional video of how to take a bump. Like, that could be the intro to bumping or whatever. Like, that, it was that good. It was a perfect bump.
It was. Kudos to the 50-year-old, or I believe he's 50, maybe a little older, for taking that. I mean, that is off, one heck of a fall.
That's like a 13, 14 foot fall, something like that. Like, that was legit. So it was entertaining. It was kind of exactly what you would expect it. Yeah. Braun got jumped in the beginning. There were chairs.
There were no surprises. Shane was
trying to use speed and whatnot, and then Braun ended up winning.
Yeah. That was that match.
It was a try to kill Shane McMahon match. But it was entertaining.
So then we get to move on to another grudge tag team match. The Miz and Morrison against Damian Priest and our Grammy Award winning Bad Bunny.
Why must we have celebrities wrestling at WrestleMania? Do you know what this could have been? And ironically enough, it's a tag match. Do you know, Webb, what this could have been?
What's that, Michael?
Well, I do believe it could have been the SmackDown Tag Team Championship match.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it could have been.
It could have, but no, we had to showcase Bad Bunny.
I will give props to Bad Bunny. He definitely showed that he has done some training, because he did not look like other celebrities that have come into WrestleMania to win a match. He looked 100 times better than 90% of these celebrities that have showed up into a wrestling ring. I will say the only person celebrity-wise, that non-full-time wrestler to show up in a wrestling ring that was better than Bad Bunny would have been Pat McAfee.
100% agree. I was literally just going to say that. The match was carried by Miz and Morrison.
Absolutely.
Actually, a lot of the heavy lifting was done with Miz because he was in the ring the most. Damian Priest got in there for a little bit, and it was fine. He did his thing against Miz and Morrison, which is great. Pro wrestler against pro wrestler. But it was really the interactions between Miz and Bad Bunny that made that so successful.
I also want to say kudos to John Morrison, because after Bad Bunny comes off the top turnbuckle onto Miz and Morrison outside, Bad Bunny then hits another spot with John Morrison with a Canadian Destroyer. And we all know that it's the guy that's receiving the Canadian Destroyer that does all the work.
Yeah.
Bad Bunny hits a Canadian Destroyer on John Morrison. Kudos to Morrison for being able to pull that off and making it look like a great spot and making Bad Bunny shine there.
Yeah, that was it was perfectly done. And, you know, sure, Bad Bunny was along for the ride or whatever with that, but he had his jump time perfectly. He held on the way that you're supposed to. Morrison timed everything perfectly. It turned out well. Bad Bunny caught him the way he was supposed to. Like, everything just, it looked really good. Bad Bunny, God, I can't. Why is his name Bad Bunny? I don't understand. I don't get it.
I'm not sure. Okay. I will say the other good spot for me with Bad Bunny is he and Damian Priest get Miz and Morrison, and they both hit matching Broken Arrow slams.
Yeah.
That looked really good. Like, he knew what he was doing there.
Yeah, he did. Like, he, and it wasn't like, oh, I'm fumbling through this. Like, it was legit. It was in stereo and it was legit. Bad Bunny did actually put in the time and the respect and everything for the business to learn how to do more than just taking a bump and doing a body slam like Snooki did.
Yeah.
So,
or,
you know,
Lawrence Taylor, any of the others that,
I mean, Lawrence Taylor was just used to shoulder checking people anyway, so that worked.
Yeah.
But Bad Bunny actually did. I was pleasantly surprised. It was actually a good match with a celebrity. And I would not be mad to see Bad Bunny compete in another match, honestly.
No, he showed that he wanted and wanted to be a superstar and has the respect for the business to put in the time and do the work to be on the grandest stage of them all at WrestleMania in a tag team match. Yes. Kudos to him. He did it. And he didn't disappoint and be your standard celebrity in a match at WrestleMania.
No. So moving on to the main event for night one of WrestleMania, we have the SmackDown Women's Championship on the line. The blueprint, the standard, the legit boss, the champion, Sasha Banks, versus the EST of WWE, despite what the graphics guy put up as her back screen, Bianca Belair.
I love this match. These two women should have been the main event of the main event for WrestleMania.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not just for whatever reason. Like, they were good.
All the way through. A nonstop, solid match. I love the spots where Sasha was trying to use Bianca's hair against her. You know, it seems to be a thing. Everybody wants to use her hair against her and pull her by her hair. But I will tell you that Sasha Banks paid for that dearly.
Did you see that? Like, she got cut. The
welt.
She got cut.
Yeah. So near the end of the match, Bianca grabs her hair and whips a running Sasha with her hair. And there's pictures, and you can see the slow-mo. The hair whips around her and sounds like a bullwhip as it hits Sasha on her right side at the rib level. And you could hear this thunderous crack.
My wife was like,
when it hit her.
Oh, look, they have sound effects. I'm like, I don't think that was sound effects. She's like, what did she put in her hair? And I'm like, there's nothing in her hair making that sound. She's like, well, she had to have weights or something in there. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, that's just her hair.
That was just a whip.
That was literally just her hair. A whip. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you see it afterwards. And like, Sasha has this giant welt and is like actually cut. She's actually cut. And I'm like, oof, oof.
Yeah.
That
the pain she had to be feeling Monday morning from that.
Yeah.
It was. Wrestling's fake, guys. Wrestling's fake.
Super fake. It was a great, great, great back and forth. The storytelling in ring was, it was great. It was intelligent. It was easy to follow, and it made sense. And I mean, it was one of those matches where you're like, yeah, you stop watching the scripted wrestling and you just want to see the match happen.
Sasha Banks impresses me every time she's in the ring. There is no doubt that woman is future Hall of Fame. She is a star and probably, arguably, the best woman's wrestler right now.
Yeah.
If not of all time.
I'm not going to argue with you there. I'm not. There is a reason that Sasha Banks has been in almost every revolutionary moment for the women's division. Like, first Hell in a Cell, like the first Iron Woman's match on pay-per-view. You know, like, the only thing that she didn't get was a spot in the WrestleMania. You know, she was back as one of the headliners for Raw for the first time since Trish and Lita. You mm-hmm. know, like, there's a reason for that. And that is because she is the boss. And that's not a moniker. Like, she is that damn good.
Yep.
Also, she ragdolls better than freaking Dolph Ziggler. So, I mean, that's saying something.
She's amazing. I love watching her wrestle. I love her work. Also, a little shout out to the history of this match. Since it is a night one main event, the first time two black women main event WrestleMania. It can never be done again. These two are the mm-hmm. first. There's only one first. Sasha Banks, Bianca Belair.
Yep.
Hands down, the best. I don't know what else to say. They've made history.
Yeah. I have one more thing to say. Bianca Belair gets the KOD and the 1-2-3 to become your new SmackDown Women's Champion.
She's it. She is now your SmackDown Women's Champion. Yep. Well deserved. She earned it. She won the Royal Rumble. And she went into a great match with Sasha. And neither woman walk away from this match with their head down. It was a great match.
Yeah. So night two.
Yeah.
All right, we're just going to start this off. The Fiend, Bray Wyatt versus Randy Orton.
So it's obvious I've loved the storyline of The Fiend from the beginning. I love the character. I love the work with Alexa Bliss. The last bit of work that was a little odd after Randy Orton burned him 6 months ago. The story leading up to this, and then this match just left me super disappointed. WrestleMania is the time to end a storyline and not leave you with questions going forward about what happened. And this match just left me puzzled. I didn't understand the last 6 months of buildup of bringing the Fiend back just to have it end with a distraction and then an RKO.
Yeah, and I don't think it ends here. I think they're building on more story, but they did it in a very weird way that is in no way, shape, or form actually telling of them setting up a new story or an advancement of this story. And it just, like you said, just left you kind of scratching your head and like, wait, what? Why?
It was weird.
It was weird. The fans booed. If that's tell anything, like, we actually got the Fiend back, like, he's in his original ring gear and everything, but then the fans booed, like
at the end, the fans boo because they don't even know what happened.
Yeah, because nobody knows what happens. It's just the lights go out and then they disappeared from the ring, and then it's like, whatever.
I will say his entrance though was one of my favorite that I've seen in a long time. They do this weird video of him coming back from the burnt to a revitalized Fiend. And then Alexa all of a sudden just comes out all happy and giddy, runs down to this Jack in the Box, or I think, as Byron just said, a big weird box thing. Yeah. And they play the Jack in the Box music, and it raises the Fiend out of this open Jack in the Box. I really thought that was a cool way to bring him in, but for it to end the way it did, utter disappointment.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see what happens going forward from this, if anything. But, I was not happy with that. That was a big letdown from what my expectations were. This was supposed to be the saving grace of WrestleMania.
It was a lot of buildup for just a super letdown.
Yeah. So moving on from that, we had the Women's Tag Team Championship. The champions Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler going up against the newly crowned number one contenders Natalya and Tamina from the night before.
So this is where I mentioned it in the earlier bit of this. They seem to be trying to push Natalya and Tamina as the good guy baby faces in this, and I just wasn't feeling it. You can hear during the match Natalya trying to get the fans to cheer for her, and the fans just aren't there. Like, I feel that the fans there were even lost as to who to root for and who to cheer until Tamina gets in the ring. And then they start cheering.
Yeah, it was... Yeah, I think what that tells is, you know, there's kind of the same thing that I feel. You've mentioned it before, too. Like, we want to see Tamina get a title.
Yeah.
Tamina has worked too long and too hard to not be champion of some kind. Like, just seriously, we can't even give her a tag title kind of thing. So I think the fans really want to see Tamina succeed, and we're not getting that. Unfortunately, she was teamed up with Natty, which, hey, I really have nothing against Natty. She's in ring. She's solid. She's a great mentor for the up and coming women in the division. She is seeming to be on the later end of her career, and, I mean, she's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame just because she has contributed a lot. And I mean, she did, she went through the dungeon. I mean, you know,
I believe she's on track to have the most wrestling matches of anybody in WWE. Probably by the time she ends her career, without a doubt, the most women's matches.
Yeah.
I want to say something I saw had her well over 1,000 matches in her career to date.
Yeah. Which I totally believe. I 100% believe that. And like I said, she's solid in the ring. It's not even like it's, you know, you're not just throwing Ava Marie out there or something like that. You know, she's a legitimate wrestler. But like you said, she had been a heel for most of the year. And then now suddenly she's with Tamina and is supposed to be a face and we're supposed to, or baby face. And we're supposed to just accept that. And that's, come on, man. We're not that dumb.
Yeah. Like, just because we haven't had fans there.
Tried to write for us.
Yeah. It was just confusing. And again, I don't know what else to say there other than Tamina is obviously, she needs the push, but the push with Natalya isn't necessarily the push she needs.
Yeah, for sure. So Nia and Shayna retain, and that was that.
Yeah, that's we're into night two.
We're into night two, and we are three matches in and still kind of being let down.
But so what we're about we to make a turnaround. Next? Grudge match. Kevin Grudge. Owens against Sami Zayn. With Logan Paul out there, but that's
yeah, we don't care.
We
yeah.
don't even care.
It
he's just there.
Yeah.
This match is a typical Kevin Owens Sami Zayn match. Like I said earlier, there's a couple people that I could just see fight forever. Drew McIntyre and Sheamus, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn.
Yep. This was so good. It was just so good. Like, I, watching them, it gave me, like, flashbacks to watching them in NXT when KO mm-hmm. first showed up and Sammy was champion. Like, it gave me flashbacks to that. It was great. Sammy was in his element. He wasn't relying on some of the weird changes to his style that he has made since doing this whole conspiracy gimmick. So you got to see flashes of the old Sami Zayn in that match, and Kevin Owens just brought what Kevin Owens brings to the table.
Yeah.
Logan Paul apparently brought hope. I guess WWE was hoping that he would bring 23 million subscribers to the product. I don't know if that was the case. He was useless. They didn't even give him a microphone. Like, he didn't even get to get on commentary. He just sat in a chair.
And gave some, in my opinion, some odd reactions.
Yeah.
But he did catch a stunner at the end when it was all over. He did
catch a stunner, which, great. You know, so
that great match.
That means he'll probably end up in the Hall of Fame. So, you know.
I mean, yeah. If we could put William Shatner in the Hall of Fame and Donald Trump in the Hall of Fame, why not? Let's put him into.
Donald Trump's not in there, is he?
Yes.
He is? When did he go in?
A few years ago.
Oh. Well, that's a thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, this was one of the best matches of the night, hands down. This was just, it was solid gold the whole way. I loved it.
I don't know.
The opening, it opens in the first 8 seconds, it or not even that. What was it, like five or six? Like, Sammy just rushes Kevin as soon as the bell rings. Pop-up power.
I will say, again, we'll go back to wrestlers that enjoy having spectators in an arena. It was obvious that Kevin Owens was so happy to have fans there from the moment he came out of the, we'll call it the curtain, down the ramp, into the ring. You could just see him pulling that energy from the fans that were there, and he was so happy that they were there.
Yeah. And that was a really cool thing about this. I will say that. Like, not only having the fans there to get that visceral reaction that we have been missing for a year, and actually hearing the real audio and the real chants and whatnot, you got to see the wrestlers, like, reactions to this stuff when they come out and they know, okay, there's going to be fans out there and stuff. But when they come out and you see it, like, it's, it, you could tell, like,
the emotion.
Yeah.
I was going to go back real quick because I didn't think about it then.
Did
Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair get to the ring? They do the announcement. They're getting ready to tie up, and they both just stop. And you can see them both full of emotion as the fans are cheering for them. I believe you can actually see Bianca actually start to cry. The emotions that they were getting from the fans of finally being able to do their craft and do their show in front of people again.
Randy Orton broke character.
Absolutely, like, he did.
He broke character at the top of the ramp because he was just overcome. You could just tell he was overcome with being in that place with all the people and the cheering and the whatnot. And he was just soaking it all in. And he just, there was like a solid like 15 seconds at the top of the ramp where he was not the Viper. He was, he was just there soaking it in. It was great. You
could finally see it in Randy Orton when he went and finally got on the turnbuckle and did his pose. You could see he was sucking it in, but he was becoming the Viper then. He knew that that was time to turn the character on.
Yeah.
But with Kevin Owens, again, he just felt the energy of the fans and radiated it. And it was so neat to see these people show that they really need their fans there to support them. That's what they feed off of. That's how they get their energy.
Yeah. So Kevin Owens, he wins.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah. Then, so next match is a good one. I can say I was happy with this match. I will say, I think, honestly, the first two matches just didn't exist. WrestleMania Night 2 started with KO and Sami Zayn, because now we've got the energy to go into the next match, Riddle and Sheamus. And again, we all know Sheamus just brings a fight.
And he did. It was a physical match. It was great to see them both like do what they do. Riddle was still going in there with his MMA background and his MMA style moveset. And it was working out until it didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not to say that it like, oh, it was one-sided and then it was a crash. You know, it's like, oh, we're switching to a squash match or whatever. It was a very back and forth match, and when it worked, it worked, and when it didn't, it didn't. And that's Sheamus doing what Sheamus does at those times.
I want to point out a spot in this match that Sheamus proved he is, without a doubt, a ring general. They're up on the top rope. He's putting so Sheamus is standing on the second rope, straddling the top rope, and he's putting Riddle in the white noise. And he steps up to do the white noise off the top rope, and he slips. But when he slips, he doesn't just fall and drop Matt Riddle, which could have been catastrophic to Riddle and or both of them. He holds him and finds a way to step down without hurting either one of them, still holding Riddle in white noise, and then completes the move. Consummate professional, really showed that he absolutely cares about his partner and his competitor in that ring. And honestly, it could have gone terrible, and Sheamus just pulled an amazing move out of it.
Yeah, it was just that alone, like, you know, obviously it was a botched setup and everything, and it's not like it was super smooth afterwards. Like, he just hit the ring and then hit the white noise. There was a bit of, you know, there was a couple seconds of wobbly and making sure he still had Riddle and everything, but he held him the whole time. Like, literally picked him up, white noise, slips off the top, steps down, still holding him, and then makes sure he was safe, and then delivered it. Like,
yeah,
it was super well done, and mad respect to Sheamus. That being said, that was not the only botch. Like, there were some spots that just didn't work out,
and you can kind of assume they're outdoors, they've had weather. The night two had thunderstorms prior to it actually starting. There was a potential chance for delay. It didn't get delayed on night two, but so you understand, the ramp's wet and slippery, their shoes aren't completely dry when they get in the ring, so some of those botches are gonna happen just because they're outdoors.
Yeah.
They're in a humid environment. So to be safe and to be able to do the things that they do and not seriously hurt each other, kudos.
Yeah. The final image of the night is Riddle trying a springboard moonsault and getting bro kicked in the mouth.
He did bust his lip
open. But that bro kick, the visual was great. Just moonsault. Nope. I'm going to kick you in the face in midair. And Sheamus gets the 1-2-3 and becomes the new United States champion.
The timing on that was utterly amazing. And poor Matt Riddle did split his lip, but the spot looked great.
Yeah. Okay, so I don't know how you feel about this. I did not like this one. I'm not saying let's skip it altogether, but
we just can't skip it. I'm very disappointed in this match, the way it went.
We got Big E versus Apollo Crews for the Intercontinental Championship in a Nigerian drum fight.
So let me start by saying it's a Nigerian drum fight, and not one drum was used.
No, they tried to use the gong. I will say that they did try to use the gong.
But so it, pretty much, look, it's a no hold barred, anything goes. Use drums, use tables, use kendo sticks. Which these guys beat the tar out of each other with kendo sticks without a doubt. They were swinging for the fences.
Yeah.
These guys needed a good, clean match. No shenanigans, no. And I'll tell you, I did not believe that Big E was going to leave this match with the belt. As much as I wanted him to, I just knew the way things were built. Apollo was going to get the belt. Not the way he did.
Not the way he did. So, they have...
It's sad. So they hit some great spots. Big E does his flying tackle spear through the ropes.
That was amazing.
That was amazing. And I'm amazed nobody got hurt. He then does the slam from the ring apron onto Apollo onto the stairs. Utterly amazing. Big E gets to do his finish. He hit him with the big ending. And then we get typical WWE creative.
Yep.
Apollo can't win without outside interference. Who's this big man that just came in and helped Apollo win? Just disappointing. Yeah. Apollo should have just got a clean win, be a champion, be a strong champion, not another Roman Reigns. We don't need another Roman Reigns.
Yeah. So Dabba Kato comes in dressed in a Party City dictator soldier uniform and chokeslams Big E, and Apollo gets the win. So I guess we're supposed to forget that Dabba Kato was ever a person or whatever, but
yeah,
that is moving on.
Yeah. It just, yeah. Raw Women's Championship, Asuka against Rhea Ripley. By the way, Rhea Ripley has been pulled up first night on Raw. She challenges Rhea Ripley or challenges Asuka. Good on her.
Yeah.
This was a good match.
This was a good
match. I enjoyed it.
I did too. This was Rhea's second match on the main roster. The other one was a tag match with her and Asuka against... No, I think it was against Nia and Shayna, wasn't it?
Yep. Yeah.
Just a solid match. Both women hitting pretty hard in their, in a physical match.
It was everything you'd expect. You know, it was not a technical masterpiece by any stretch of the imagination.
Nope.
You know that going in, you got Asuka, who is a striker and a submission person. You get Rhea Ripley, who's just this beast of a woman. that is amazing no matter what she does.
Yeah.
Exactly what you expect. I will say, Rhea actually took more of a beating in this match than I thought she was going to. And if you thought this match was going to be on par with the wrestling match of Bianca and Sasha, nope. This was a completely different match that could have been a main event.
Yes. It was a different type of match, but no less good. It was not a technical, like you said, it was not a technical match, but neither one of these women have a technical style. You know, Asuka is strong style. She's a striker. Rhea is a brawler. And I mean, it just, it came through and it was fine.
It was a fun match to watch. I will say the ending was a little abrupt for me. Because Asuka was in this advantage of beating her down and kicking her, and Rhea did the whole gaining energy from it and becoming strong. And all of a sudden she hit a riptide and the match is over.
Yeah.
That was a little odd to me. I don't know if maybe they ran out of time or they got cut short. Just a weird ending.
In what was a great match. They must have been running long. So, I mean, they had to have been running long. Because there's no way that they planned that ending. It did. It was super, super quick.
It felt abrupt.
It did feel abrupt. But, yeah. Nobody's ready for Asuka except for Rhea Ripley, who is your new Raw Women's Champion.
So, I'm going to throw this out there. You have a new NXT Women's Champion.
Yeah.
You have a new Raw Women's Champion, and you have a new SmackDown Women's Champion, all of which have been, well, the two latter, the Raw and SmackDown Women's Champion, were NXT less than a year ago.
Yep.
So NXT has taken over the women's division.
Yep. 100%. NXT's women division is the strongest women's division in the world. It is. And everybody who has the belts now or had them previously was NXT alumni. So that's saying something to me.
Yeah.
You know?
NXT's doing something right.
They're doing something right.
So,
are you ready for the main event? I'm not, whatever. It happened.
I wanted more out of this match.
Have we mentioned that Roman Reigns is a paper champion and can't win on his own? We mentioned that?
How many recordings in our year of doing this now, Michael, have I mentioned Roman Reigns cannot win a championship match without somebody helping him win?
I believe it was after his second quote unquote title defense. I don't know. I'm not really acknowledging him as the champion. He just is what the website says, but I don't believe everything I read on the internet. So,
triple threat match. I will say the build to this, I'm happy because seeing the build up to this, Edge is in a singles match 2 weeks ago against Jay and looked a little rough. I don't know if it was their timing or Edge's just wasn't feeling the match, or he still had a little ring rust. So throwing Daniel Bryan into this match, I think, was a great thing. And Daniel Bryan was able to bring more out of Edge, in my opinion, into this match and get him to elevate to not ring rust, to the Edge that we saw 10 years ago, because it's 10 years almost to the day of this WrestleMania that Edge retired.
Yeah, he wasn't going to get to wrestle again. It was 10 years to the day.
So these three guys, the only happy part for me in this match is in 10 years, all three of these men had to step away from wrestling for one reason or another because of physical problems for them to be in the main event of WrestleMania, I think was great. That's the shining spot of this is don't ever let fate tell you you can't do something. You can do it. You've just got to be willing to do the work.
Yeah.
All three of these men have done that.
Yep. They all deserved a spot there. And it was an inspirational story when you're looking at it from that point of view. Looking at it from a story point of view.
Terrible.
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. Daniel Bryan gets himself inserted into the match, which, cool, I guess, because, you know, he did make Roman tap and he should have already been the champion, but whatever. Edge earned his spot.
But Roman couldn't win another championship match without help. That's how he beat Daniel Bryan.
Yep. So if you're not familiar with the triple threat rules, the first person to gain pinfall or submission is the winner. You become the new champion.
Have to pin the champion.
Yeah, you don't have to pin the champion or submit the champion, just the other person. There's also no disqualifications. So there's no countouts. There's no ring breaks. No, you can use chairs. Or, I don't know, maybe if you happen to have a cousin.
If you have a Jey Uso at ringside, you can use it.
Yeah, if you happen to have a Jey Uso ringside, he can start super kicking your opponents in the face in the first 2 minutes of the match, so you're not even trying to pretend that you're going to win the title on your own at WrestleMania and look like an actual champion.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you happen to have one of those, you can absolutely use it.
Can I get myself a Jey Uso for life just so I have somebody to help me win things from here on out?
I mean, I don't know what they go for. We can look on the internet. We can send emails or whatever.
I mean, at this point, I think everybody needs a Jey Uso.
I think everybody does need a Jey Uso. Help us get a Jey Uso for the show. You can go to our show description, and our Patreon link is in there. So go ahead, sign up, become a patron, and help us get a Jey Uso.
Because if we can have a Jey Uso, then we can win.
We can win, guys. We too can be champions. So that's how that went down. Like, legitimately, in the first 2 minutes, he was super kicking Edge and Daniel Bryan, and they weren't even pretending, even on commentary, or they were just, we're not even pretending he's trying to win this on his own. They immobilize Jey Uso with chairs, and that was great.
And a really nice DDT on the steel steps.
Really nice DDT.
I thought Edge was trying to kill him, literally. Picks him up for that DDT that Edge does. And
yeah, Edge gave Jey Uso like a legit implant DDT right onto the steel stairs. And Jey was like, they sold it. Like, Jey was like, I'm dead. I'm just dead. Like, whatever. So they wheeled him out. They took him to the back. And then it was a lot of back and forth. They beat up Roman on the outside, and then you had an actual wrestling match on the inside when Edge and Daniel Bryan got in. And that was great. It was actually really entertaining to watch those two go at it. They were feeding off of each other really well. There were times when I will say that Roman got in, and some of the counters and the back and forth was good.
So let me say, this match, minus Jey Uso, was a great match.
Yeah, yeah.
Take Jey Uso out of the match, it's a great match.
Weapons, but so was everybody else. So I'm like, cool, everybody uses chairs. I'm fine with that.
Triple threat, cool.
Yeah, it's triple threat, fine. Once Jey Uso was gone, the match actually looked legitimate. And it was like, okay, Roman's up super strong. Oh no, he's getting his, you know, they're teaming up against him. You know, kind of stuff, like back and forth. There was a lot of really good stuff going on.
Best spot of that is Edge has a crossface on Roman. And what's Bryan come in and do? He puts the lapel block on the other arm. So you've got Edge holding Roman in a crossface and Bryan holding him with a lapel lock. And then they just start headbutting each other because you let go, I let go, you let go, I let go.
Yeah, it was. And meanwhile, Roman, at this point, Roman had originally had broken the original crossface. So Edge reached out, grabbed a piece of a chair that had broken off, put it in Roman's mouth, and continued the crossface with the piece of chair in Roman's mouth. And you just see, like, there is one spot where I'm like, I swear, I hope this becomes a meme. Roman's eyes were just so wide and he had the bar in his mouth. I'm like, that needs to be a meme. That needs to be a meme picture right there.
I think that's the one time I actually ever felt sorry for Roman Reigns.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, no, it was his giant mouth when he does his hoo-ah, when he does the spear or whatever. And I'm like, he has that thing so far back into his jaw. I'm like, Edge, you need to calm down.
He had to have been biting that thing with his wisdom teeth at that point.
Seriously. And then, yeah, then you had the little belt. It's just, then they just started headbutting. All the while, they're holding his arms. Both of his arms are stretched out. He has this thing in his mouth. And you have Edge and Daniel Bryan headbutting each other on Roman Reigns' back. Like, yeah, that was a WrestleMania moment.
That was my favorite spot of the whole night. I mean, this match, that's it. I'll always remember that.
Yes. So, yeah. I mean, after that, like, they break that up, whatever. Jay comes out of nowhere and beats them up.
Edge takes him out takes Jay out with a spear because, you know, you have to take out the fourth guy that's not even in the match, and goes to set up a concerto on both Roman and Daniel Bryan.
That's where I figured,
okay, cool. We're actually going to get Edge with a win.
Yeah, this is going
to
happen. Edge is
going to get the win 10 years to the day of his retirement. He's going to get the belt back.
Nope. That did not happen. I think it was a spear, right? He got speared. Yeah. And then Roman finished him off with a concerto of his own to Edge. Dragged Edge over on top of Daniel Bryan and then pinned both of them. 1, 2, 3, still technically
the paper champion,
the universal champion, Roman Reigns.
Has yet to win a championship match without help from somebody. Even when he was trying to beat Jay in the two matches he did against Jay, he had help, whether it was Jimmy coming in and Jay having to forfeit because Jimmy was in pain, or weakest champion has not won a match without somebody helping him since he won the title.
Yeah. And again, I'm going to emphasize this again. This is not an insult to Roman Reigns. I don't believe that Roman Reigns is a bad wrestler. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that he is even a bad champion. What this is this is us insulting creative so they can get their heads out of their asses and actually book him correctly, so that even if he's going to be a heel, that we hate him for the right reasons, not just booing him because it doesn't make any sense and we're tired of it, but booing him for the correct reasons because he's actually making us angry because he's being a good heel.
If this Roman Reigns could just win matches without any outside help, without any run-ins, I without a doubt would call him head of the table, tribal chief. You've got my respect. You are a dominant champion.
Yeah. I don't even care if he goes like Super Roman or whatever, and halfway through he just stops selling things and just beats the person to a pulp. Yeah. I don't even care about that. Fine. Whatever, he's doing that, but he's winning on his own. Yeah. It's just the way the creative is booking him and making him do these promos of I'm the alpha, I'm the everything.
Acknowledge me.
And then he needs, I'll acknowledge Jey Uso before I acknowledge Roman Reigns. Like, he's the reason for the title.
Yeah.
You know, at this point, like, you know, Jey Uso's right foot deserves that belt more than Roman Reigns does. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Paul Heyman's unlocking skills.
Yep. So there's that. Overall, like we said, WrestleMania had some good matches. It has some great spots, but it did not live up to the hype, A, of a WrestleMania, and B, did not or could not get out of the shadow of the overall product of Stand and Deliver, in my humble opinion.
I completely agree.
So
the best part of the week was NXT Stand and Deliver.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens going forward. If they choose to stay in Florida, maybe they can start having live audiences again or something. We'll see what happens in the future. But we don't know. We don't know what any of that means going forward.
All I know is they're in a new Thunderdome and a new stadium as of last night. We're recording this on a Tuesday. The Monday Night Raw following was in another Thunderdome. So that's all I know for now.
Yep, same here. So the next pay-per-view is going to be Backlash, I think.
Right? Wait.
You corrected me?
WrestleMania Backlash.
Oh, WrestleMania Backlash. Great. We'll see.
We've got to get that name out there a little more.
We'll see about getting in before that. And actually trying to be bi-weekly, like we said we are on the description. Crickets.
It's been an interesting year. Sorry, people.
I have been at 3 jobs in the last year and everything since starting this podcast. So
I've lost a job and had COVID and am working on finding a job.
Yep.
It's been a year, people. 2020 was just not just a year for interesting wrestling. It was interesting personally as well.
Yes. We're here. We will put out shows when we can. I can't promise that will be bi-weekly yet, but we're working up to that. All of our contact info is in the description. Feel free to email us with comments, hate mail, whatever. Please, we would prefer not to get hate mail, but hey, if you need to, you know, swear at us or whatever, get it.
We
off
all
your
know
chest,
wrestling fans are fine. The most opinionated people out there.
It's true.
And our opinions aren't your opinions. Cool. Share them. Yeah. Share them with us. Please.
Share them. That's fine. We'll read it on the air. It's fine. You know, it's okay. We want to hear from you. We want to hear what you want to hear. Let us know if you have any suggestions, comments, complaints, whatever. Our links to our Patreon and stuff are in there also. So if you do feel charitable, you are able to contribute to the show and help us, you know, grow and get bigger and stuff. Welcome to season 2 of Make Us Believe. Webb, you got anything else?
No, I'm interested to see where... Now that we're off the road to WrestleMania and we're into the year, I'm interested to see where we go with a bunch of these storylines and how creative can repair itself after this last 3 months of terribleness.
Yeah.
I'll say 3 months. I mean, it's been longer, but the last 3 months have been pretty bad.
Well, yeah, we'll just focus on the last 3 months of hot garbage because the rest of it, I mean, that's a lot of hot garbage to handle.
Yeah. I only want a memory of about 3 months right now.
Yeah, that's fair. All right. Well, with that, we have held your attention for over 2 hours now. And while we do love you, we do have things that we have to do. So, in closing, I'm Michael.
I'm Webster.
Don't stop believing, guys.